So I'm Scott. Hi. And this talk is about personal productivity. It's about dealing with information overload, and it's also about talking about some of the things that we feel when we are technologists, programmers, managers, project managers, that people don't talk about. So I'm going to talk about some of those things. But first, here is a picture of Darth Vader riding on a cat, because it's awesome. I mean, he's got like his arm back like that. I mean, that's just great. All right. Now, I am very old. I'm older than most of you. And I started out before this doing C++ and TurboVision and things like that. Where's my TurboVision people at? Who did this? Yes, old people. We're old. I made a blood sugar diabetes system on the Palm Pilot in black and white. It's amazing. And then we got color. I did that. I've been blogging for now, how many years? Like 10 or 13, 12? I'm old, I don't remember. Very, very long time. I blog about all kinds of things. I blogged about being a phony. We'll talk about what that means, about what a phony is. I blog about many things, not just about programming. I blogged once about, is daddy on a call? And I made a little light outside of my door so that my son would see if the light is red, then don't come and bother me because I have a home office. This is him ignoring the light. He still ignores the light. Thank you, sir. That's my boss. Apparently, that's going to be on my review later, so thanks. I blogged about teaching kids electronics. I blogged about square foot gardening for programmers, because we think about these things differently, right? Because there's got to be an Excel spreadsheet there or some JavaScript or something. I blog about making an arcade machine. This is now in my office. This is a lot of things I'm doing. I've made some Windows Phone app. I made Baby Smash. Baby Smash, any Baby Smash people? Yeah, Baby Smash. This is not about smashing babies. If this is a baby for the baby to smash on the keyboard of an old laptop. I've also got a number of books that I'm not very proud of. And I'm working on a book on relationships with my wife that will probably never come out. I have a podcast and another podcast and another podcast. And I've done videos for Pluralsight because I must dance. So people come to me with advice for productivity. None of this stuff's actually my day job, which is a little concerning because my boss is back there. I just do it because I just love it. I have so much fun, right? And then also all the money. Don't be this person. Someone who will ask you advice, but then they do the opposite. This is called being an asshole. People say, hey, Scott, how can I be productive? How can I do all these things? How do you find so much time in the day? How do you spend time with your family? That is this talk, okay? Now, there is an American actor. American actor named Paul Reiser. He had a TV show. And also had a famous movie in the U.S. It was called Diner. So this famous actor was just getting started in the business, just at the beginning, before he was famous. So he went and he asked this much more famous actor named Peter Falk. He was Columbo. And he said, how do you write a movie script? He's looking for advice. He wants tips. We're always asking for tips, right? This man here, if you've ever seen Columbo, he's got a very scratchy voice, so he basically is talking like this all the time. And he says, well, you get some paper, you put it in a typewriter, you type fade in, and then you keep typing. This is the kind of advice that your crazy old uncle gives you, right? But this is really powerful advice. This is get off your ass and write the movie script. You do it. You sit down. He's telling him to sprint. He's telling him to do a scrum. He's just focus. Stop thinking about the external stuff. Stop asking people for advice. Just sit down and do it. So we're going to talk about scaling yourself, if it is possible. People always ask me about that. How do you get more hours in the day? Let's figure it out. So it turns out that the less stuff that you do, the more of it you can do. That's a pretty good quote. I like that. We like quotes. We like fake quotes. Let's make that a quote. Me. From a computer science perspective, if you do nothing, you can do it infinitely. Yeah, scale infinitely. Here's a chart to prove it. Yeah, it's true. If you write to Dev Null, it just scales up very nicely. Now, there was a time when all of the information in the world was basically like in the library at Alexandria, and that was it. You could know everything because there was a finite amount of information, right? And now, everything is just 1,000 plus. There's just more information than you can possibly deal with. But we somehow think that we will be able to know all of those things. We think, well, I'll just work late tonight, and I'll catch up, and then read a little more, or I'll work harder, and then I'll know this information. But the fact is, you can't, right? Now, when I was starting out in the 80s, developing software, the sum total of all information that there was in the world were in these two books. And if the answer wasn't in these books, you were screwed. Maybe you could put a question on CompuServe or do FidoNet or the Usenet and then wait for a week and get an answer. But for the most part, you were alone in your parents' basement, and that was all the information there was. But today, we're in a situation where a third of our workday is being wasted by interruptions, and half of the information that we're receiving is just garbage information. 7 years ago, the number that I could find was that 281 exabytes, that's thousands of petabytes, of information was getting created. So the idea that we could absorb it all is silly. But what happens is we get this expectation that we can absorb this information, and then we get into trouble. We get these danger signs. Danger of death by failing. These are the signs that you might have a problem. And I want you to be honest with yourself and do some homework here and think about if perhaps you are having this kind of feeling. This sense that you might be missing some deadlines. An internal feeling that you might be a failure or a phony. You know what a phony is, right? A fake, where someone at work is going to find out, I don't think Hanselman knows F sharp. We should probably fire him. Well, I don't know F sharp. I'm learning, right? I'm not claiming that I know it. Now, also, when your family starts to complain, that's a problem. But the real problem is when you say, I just need to work late and catch up. And then that becomes the standard, where you are working late to catch up every day, every month. I used to tell my wife, well, it's a busy season. You know, October is kind of a busy time. You know, October, November, kind of December, January, February, March, April, May, June, kind of that July, April, September, just that kind of, that whole, well, you know, all it's always a busy season. And what happens is you rush home, you have a rushed dinner, you put the kids to bed, then you work after the kids are in bed, and then you go to bed at midnight or 1 or 2 or 3, and you wake up and then you do it again. And you think to yourself, well, I hope that this will be over soon, and I hope I can catch up. Well, it turns out that hope is not a strategy, right? Hope will not get you out of that situation. So how do we do that? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about two words. Before it was the cloud and the client, right? This one is going to be about the word effectiveness and the word efficiency. We're going to take those two words and we're going to juxtapose them. Now, fortunately, in Polish, those words are different, but in many languages, effectiveness and efficiency are very similar. Even native English speakers, if you walk up to the average American or Englishman and say, what's the difference between effectiveness and efficiency, they will go, well, because they're very similar words, okay? When I do this talk in different countries, I translate the words to make it clear. And sometimes in languages, I can't remember if that was Swedish or not, but, you know, effective is effective. You can hear, you can see effective in here, right? I also have it in Arabic. Because I was in Cairo, and, you know, you got to translate. So effectiveness means a very special thing. Effectiveness means doing right things, okay? Effectiveness is goal-oriented, picking a goal. That is a different word than efficiency. Efficiency isn't about goal orientation. Efficiency is not about doing right things. It's about doing things right, doing things in an economical way. So being effective is choosing a direction to run, while being efficient is running really well, right? If you pick the wrong direction and run really well, you may be an efficient runner, but you are not an effective runner, right? So phrasing that differently, effectiveness is doing the right things, but efficiency is doing things right, okay? We're going to juxtapose these two words because we combine these words too often. We're always talking about efficiency and making ourselves very efficient at work and making our workflow efficient, but we don't actually often ask ourselves, are we being effective? Is this guy being effective? I'll make it clearer. Perhaps not. So let's talk about being effective. There is your inbox. Now, this is not an email presentation. When we talk about inbox, we're talking about the information that's coming into your life. This could be paper. This could be your inbox. It could be your texts. It could be anywhere that information flows in to your world. And people multitask, and they bounce around from inbox to inbox, and they think about these things, but they never really triage this information. Triage is a great word. It's a French word meaning to sort, separate, sift, or select. But it doesn't just mean to sort. When you say triage, you usually think of war or you think of zombies. Because if the zombies have attacked everyone in this room, we're going to immediately triage. Are you a zombie? Are you dead? Okay, get out of the way. Are you wounded? Did they bite you? It's very quick sorting. It's very dramatic. It's very ruthless. Oh, it's just a scratch. You're a zombie. You're dead. Chop, right? There's no discussion. Well, maybe it was just a scratch. Let me rub it off. You're ruthless. We need to be ruthless. And the word triage implies ruthlessness. Delete, delete, delete. Ruthless. People don't do that. This is a toe tag. Toe tag you put on the dead body, right? Or the injured person, the person who's bitten by the zombie. These are your categories. Minor, walking wounded, or non-life-threatening but serious, or pulseless. Notice that they say pulseless. They didn't just say dead. I think that's a very politically correct way of saying dead. You're the pulse deficient. So what we need to do is start thinking about triaging work. And what I've done here is I'm going to take a couple of popular techniques. David Allen from Getting Things Done is one. And another one is Stephen Covey from The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Now, David Allen says that work has this threefold nature. There's work that you set up ahead of time, predefined work. There's work as it appears, meaning it comes, it just appears, it's interruptive work. And then there's the work of defining work. No one does that last one. When was the last time you actually put an appointment on your calendar where the goal of the appointment was figure out what the hell I'm doing today? That'd be a great appointment, you know? A couple of hands went up, but that's very rare. But when you get overwhelmed like that, you need to set an appointment and sit down and define work. But what happens is work as it appears is what you end up doing. Because interruptions and urgency are really exciting, and you don't realize it, but it's like, it gets you going. It's like putting out, what are you doing? I'm putting out fires at work. We always say that, oh, I'm putting out fires. Because putting out fires are exciting. But sitting around and training and learning how to prevent fires isn't really sexy or interesting at all, is it? So this information that comes in, though, takes up your time. And what you need to do is you need to apply the four D's. Do it, drop it, delegate it, defer it. If you can do it in a few minutes, just do it. Just get it out of the way. But drop it is going to be really important. We're going to talk about drop it later. Drop it is your most powerful weapon in getting stuff done. Another one is delegating things. But as techies, we are very likely what they call type A personalities. We don't trust anybody to do our work for us, so delegating is a really difficult, like, I kind of trust you, but I'm going to check on you, you know. Delegate it and release it from your brain. It will be done, or it's their fault, not yours. Delegating is powerful. And then defer it. Let's do it later. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the four D's from getting things done, and which is David Allen, and I'm going to juxtapose it over the top of Stephen Covey's quadrants, if you've ever read The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. So here we've got a axis that says importance, and here's one that says urgency. So something that is both urgent and important, you do it now. That's obvious, right? Pants are on fire. Do something about that, absolutely, right? Something that is very, very urgent but not so important, you know, maybe have someone else do it. Here's where we need to be spending our time. Things that are important but are not yet urgent, things that are not yet on fire. Sit around and think about when to do it, schedule it. But the most important thing, and the thing that we do not often do, is dump things. They are neither urgent nor important. So what do we do there? What do we spend there? Well, it's, you know, it's trivia. You've heard of administrative work, right? Administrative. We use a made-up word, administrivia. It's just, you know, expense reports and crap. Like, it's administrative trivia, administrivia. That work sucks. Try to get rid of that work. Get someone else to do that work, or do that work and multitask. We'll talk about that. Crises, having a lot of having a crisis is when things are important and urgent. So examples of this are like, you know, the phone ringing is usually a crisis. Something bad is happening. But something that is neither urgent nor important, something that will never, ever be important, unless your job is to do Twitter. I'm assuming your job is not to tweet. Mine is, but your job is not. No, I'm not really. Twitter is never urgent nor important, but we sure spend a lot of time on Twitter, don't we? Why do we spend so much time doing things like Facebook and Twitter? This is a picture of a mouse, and the mouse has an electrical wire going into his brain. And the brain wire is stimulating the serotonin response to give that mouse a feeling of well-being, that things are going well, and that of excitement, of enthusiasm. This is what drugs do. So that wire is plugged into this lever here that will stimulate this animal's brain. And all the animal has to do is pull to refresh that sense of well-being. Just pull to refresh, and then they'll be, pull to refresh. That is what is happening to you when you do that. Because it's urgent. You feel needed. Ooh, I got a mention. Ooh, more likes. That is what we are doing to our kids' brains when we give them Instagram and all those kinds of things. You can't sell likes on Instagram for food. At least nowhere that I know about. I don't know if you have this this concept, but you've heard this idea of when Jesus says, remember when there was only one set of footprints? This is when Jesus unfollowed you on Twitter because you tweet too much. Twitter's the first thing I drop when I'm stressed out. Dropping the ball is so important. In any system that is a successful system, sometimes dropping packets works. That's how the internet itself works, is drops packets. That's how Skype works, right? Like, most of the packets are just like, whee! Skype doesn't even care, but still, most Skype calls work out okay. Communication is fault tolerant. Sometimes dropping the ball is the right answer. Just drop it, unless you're this guy, and then don't drop it at all. By that, I mean sometimes not answering an email and just letting it go. If it was really urgent, they'll come back to you. Now, this is where the dean is freaking out. He just said, don't answer everyone's email, and it's just not that important. Because it's not. Because you have to decide what is important. What is important to you, to your job, to your life, to your well-being. And here is a guy surfboarding in the sky on a crocodile. Because I just want to make sure you're paying attention. And that's freaking awesome, by the way. Now, what happens is email and these different tools start to press on your brain and create something that I call psychic weight. Now, do you all have digital video recorders where you can record a show on a hard drive? Is it, you know, it's part of the TV package? What is this called? We have a thing called a DVR or a TiVo, digital video recorder, right? I can go to my phone and record something and then it'll be waiting for me, yeah? You remember when these came out, right? Before, we would be home at 8 o'clock to watch Seinfeld or whatever, right? And then now, you just set the recorder and then you watch it whenever you want. Time-shifting TV. This was a miracle. This was a miracle of productivity. We used to have what we called appointment television. We actually set an appointment. I'd love to go to dinner, but I have to be at home at 8 o'clock to watch Law and Order. Then I can just shift that. I thought this was great. But then I started having conversations with my wife, actual conversations, where I would say, oh man, we have got like 19 episodes of Dexter on the thing. We could put the kids to bed early, stay up all night, and watch an entire season of The Wire, and then wake up at work, you know, and go to work the next day. We started realizing that what was a gift, what was a productivity tool, started to press on us, like just thinking about how much TV is saved, and we're running out of space, and like, oh God, I'm running out of space on the thing, I'm not going to record. When we decided to let that go, the weight that was lifted was huge. I've still never seen The Wire. This is a very famous TV show on HBO. The Wire is one of these cop shows. When you tell someone you've never seen it, right? It's like saying you're vegan or whatever. You've never seen The Wire? Oh my God. Oh, it's so good. Oh, The Wire. But rather than letting that stress me out, I just let it go. I'm not going to watch The Wire. So I wanted to think about what my real goals are, and watching TV isn't necessarily that goal. One of my goals is to have a really good day. Because when you think about what I said before about being a phony, I didn't like coming home from work and feeling like I faked it all day. I didn't like going to work and feeling like I got nothing done and that I had to stay up at night to do more work. So I write down three outcomes that would make a good day. Not a list of 20 things, not the 30 bugs I need to fix, three things that I could do at work so that when I got home at the end of the day, I wouldn't feel like I suck. Three things is a good number, because you can remember it. You don't have to write that stuff down. Then, three things for the week, and three things for the year. And what you do is on Monday, you have a vision for the week. These are the three things I'm going to get done. And the sooner you get them done, the more you feel like, this was a great week. I got that one thing done, and that other thing done, and that other thing done. And then on Friday, you reflect back on the week. You set an appointment. I have an actual appointment on my calendar at 4:30 on Friday where I go back and I think about what I did that week. And I'm honest with myself about what I did. Was this a good week? I only got two of the three things done. Why did I not get that third thing done? And then I remember that Monday next week is the day that I can start it all over again. Monday is an opportunity to begin again and begin fresh. So have a vision for your Monday. Think of three things you'll do each day and get those things done. And then think about, can you do those things earlier in the day and you'll feel better about yourself? That way you're not rushing to do them in the afternoon. I'll talk more about that in a moment. Sometimes bosses and deans of schools say that they're busy. I'm just so busy. I'm very important. You know, I'm busy. I'm starting to think, like Tim Ferriss does, that being busy, a certain kind of busy, you know the busy I'm talking about, being busy is a form of laziness. Because it's easy to be busy, you just pack your schedule in and you freak out. And then you're busy all the time. But what it is it's lazy thinking and indiscriminate action. Indiscriminate action meaning taking actions without really thinking about what you're doing. Rushing from place to place, having lots of meetings, but nothing actually gets done. And then I hear people who then go to the bar after work, and they'll spend 2 or 3 hours at the bar going, man, I just don't have enough time in the day to get anything done. I've been here at the bar for 3 hours, but still. I really respect people, you may have a friend like this, who disappear, and then they come back a week later, and they say, man, I turned off the internet, or I put my phone in airplane mode, and I got a lot of work done. This famous American poet, David Rakoff, says that being creative and making something, making stuff, is the opposite of hanging out. So if you ever catch yourself hanging out, but complaining about how you never have any time to make stuff, hanging out is the opposite of what you need to be doing. So what I said before about being online and being on Twitter makes me think of this cartoon here. Are you coming to bed? I can't. This is important. What? Someone is wrong on the internet. Have you ever had an argument on Twitter and actually successfully changed someone's mind? In 140 characters? Doesn't happen. You'll never see me argue on the internet. Some of you all follow me on Twitter. All those fights about this never happens. And I'm so happy without it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, la, just floating above the fray, not even thinking about it. I would encourage you to do the same. Someone is always going to be wrong on the internet, and you will never convince them. So when people say, Scott, how do you have so much time in the day? Well, I can get 1 hour for free by never arguing on the internet. There's a free hour. I just gave you a gift, free hour right there. So let's talk about efficiency. Okay, we can think about making good choices. We can think about prioritization, deciding what really matters. But once we do that, how do we figure out how to run in the right direction? Here's some homework for you. You can take a picture of this if you want to. This is your homework. Identify the data streams in your life. All that crap that's coming at you. What is it? Is it Twitter? Is it email? Is it comments on your blog? Your contact form? All these things. Your homework is to sort signal versus noise, meaning important, useful information at the top and noise at the bottom. Noise is stuff that doesn't matter. And ask yourself which packet can be dropped. So here's my list. I've sorted this. I've sorted this my way. Your list is different. I'm a community manager at Microsoft, so the community is important to me. So if I get a phone call from the community or a Skype or something, that's important. That's an urgent thing. Work email is more important for me than personal email. Twitter is low on the list. Google Reader, before they got rid of it. Let's just say blogs and RSS. And then my TiVo, which is my television recorder, is the lowest. Now, here's the trick. When your stress level fluctuates up and down, the level at which you drop stuff is going to fluctuate up and down. If you're stressed out at work, but you're still trying to catch up on TV, Twitter, and Google Reader, draw a line. Draw a line and say, my stress level requires me to skip all that stuff. I've even gotten to the point when I'm very busy that I draw the line on personal email. Everything there and below. I just warn my wife, I'm not going to think about that. You can even come up with rules by which you can drop work email. And I'll show you a trick for that in a moment as well. Some people think that the solution is email rules and filters, and they'll make dozens of these things. This is rearranging chairs on the Titanic. The ship is going down. You're like, do these chairs look nice? You can do that all you want, but I think there's only one rule, one or two, that works for me. This is the rules that I use for my email. I've got my inbox. Then I have a second inbox that I have called Inbox CC. This is the stuff that I was CC'd on. This was the number one biggest thing that I did that helped me survive at Microsoft. You can notice here that I've got 240 emails in total in this particular situation, but only 80 of them are directly to me. 2/3 of them I was CC'd on. And I've trained my boss and people, and this is important, training your boss is important, we'll talk about that. I've trained them that if you CC me on something and expect it to get done, it's not going to get done. And you only have to not do it once, and then they'll learn that, oh, he's not going to do that if you CC them. CCing is a way of saying, I just want to let you know, carbon copy, FYI. 2 is, I need you to do this. I only check my inbox CC like 3 times a week, maybe twice a week. This cut my email down by 2/3. Now, I am a community manager, which means I have to think about the Azure community and the ASP.NET community, so I did have to add an extra rule, which is inbox external. Notice that that's empty. That's because emails from you all show up there. You're external to my company. Emails from you are more important than emails from people inside of Microsoft. That's why they get managed sooner. So right there, I've prioritized what matters. This matters, this matters, this matters. Now then I have an extra little search box here called Bosses 3 Up. What this means is my boss, my boss's boss, and my boss's boss. Boss's boss's boss. Basically 3 Scotts. Anyone named Scott shows up right there. And this is just in case my boss is talking about something on another thread and I want to catch what he's saying. And then I have one called Big Ass Mail because I don't want to fill up my mailbox. So anything over 5 megabytes goes in there. That's just a little extra one. So inbox 2 and inbox CC, game changer. Now, here's your homework. More homework. Oh man, there was going to be homework. Here's ready for this. This is Monday, right? When's you're going back to work on Wednesday, right? Okay. Wednesday, do not check your email. Do not check your email in the morning. Try not to check your email until noon. Unless your job is check an email, unless that's on your job description. Oh, you're the email checker. I want you to think about the stuff you have to do, the bug you want to clear, the prototype you want to make, the PowerPoint deck you need to write, the Word document you've been avoiding, and do that thing. You're going to find all this time in the morning from 8 to noon that's just wide open in front of you. And you're going to get one of those 3 things that you wanted to do done before lunch. Email in the morning is good for only one thing. Teleporting to the afternoon. It's time travel. I'm going to go to work and have a really productive day today. Oh, I'm just going to open Outlook. It's 2 o'clock. What the hell just happened? Oh, I guess I'll go to lunch. And then I come back. It's 3:30. Oh, man, I'm 4 o'clock. I'm really starting to feel good, but I got to get going home soon. That's what email does. It literally launches you into afternoon. Don't do it. Now, other people will tell you, oh, just wake up earlier. Those are what we call morning people, and they're evil. I'm not a morning person. So I've invented extra hours in the morning by avoiding email. Get that work done. Challenge yourself. Don't check email in the morning. Now, here's where the dean started to freak out as well. You ever go on an airplane and you clear your inbox? You're like, yeah, it's such a good feeling because, of course, you're in airplane mode and the inbox is empty. And then you land and then all your email goes out. But you know what? Email is like rabbits, right? Rabbits are only good for making more rabbits. If you answer email, you're going to get an answer back and then it's a thing. Then it's a whole thing. The only thing that email is going to get you is more email. If you respond, they will respond. So think about it. Is the right thing a response or is the right thing a text or a phone call or a Skype or a very short meeting? What can you do to avoid email? Also, you teach people how to treat you. If you're a consultant or if you work for a big company and you answer your email on Sunday afternoons, you just taught your boss, I will answer email on Sunday afternoon. And then you become the person at work that they go to on Sunday afternoons. If that's okay with you, be aware, but you taught them that. You told them that was okay. If you can reach your phone from your bed without opening your eyes, then you have a problem. You have a wire, an electrical wire into your head, and you've taught people that you're the one that answers email at that time. Because it's fun to feel important. It's fun to feel like they're going to call you. It's fun to be urgent. But you have to ask yourself, am I putting energy into things that I don't want more of? Do you want to be that person? Now, I tease a little bit about how old I am, but I have a certain sense of mortality about when I'm going to die. And I've realized that there is a finite number of keystrokes that are left in my hands before I die. You know how old you are. You know how fast you type. Do the math and figure out how many more keystrokes you have. Siri and Cortana are great, but they're not going to give you more time. I actually made a website to prove this. If you go to keysleft.com, I will actually tell you, if you enter in your age and how fast you type, how many books you have left in your hands, how many love letters, or how many emails to your boss. So you can ask yourself, do I want to be writing books or do I want to be writing emails to my boss? There's a really great website called Five Sentences. It's a personal policy that email will be five sentences or less. You can actually put it in your signature and say, I'm only going to have emails of five sentences left. We all have that person at work. We know this person. When you see their emails, it's a wall of text, right? It's like, oh, here we go. I got to scroll. Seriously, if you have to scroll, why are you putting those keystrokes out into the world? No one's reading that email. If you are that person, no one reads your email. It's too big. Bulleted list, break it up, something. But you need to ask yourself, where do those keystrokes belong? It's important work. Email is where keystrokes go to die. So where should they go? They should go somewhere with a URL. If you email me, sir, we've just met, you're a nice guy, you ask me a question, I don't know you, I'm not going to give you 5,000 of my keystrokes. I don't like you like that. But it's a great question he asks. I'll write a blog post about it, and then I'll email him the link. And then that, every page view is 5,000 keystrokes that gets generated instantly. My keystrokes live on. People say, Scott, how come you have time to blog? It's because I'm not emailing. I'm writing the blog post, and then I'm emailing you the link. And you build a frequently asked questions of everything that you know. Often you all will send me questions, and then I'll just send you the link I know I've already written. Now, if you don't have a blog, that's fine. You have a SharePoint, you have a knowledge base, you have a wiki. Literally anywhere except for email. Put it in the documentation. Maybe five sentences is too much. Maybe three. You can actually put any number that you want right there, and it will automatically generate the website for you. Now, this is all electronic stuff that we're talking about. Let's talk about physical stuff for a second, too. Everything you have, electronic or physical, you should have a trusted source, a place for it. We all have that junk drawer. I know where all my USB cables are. Try a trusted source and put stuff there. It might be Dropbox. It might be Evernote. It might be OneNote. It might be todo.txt. Doesn't matter. But you want to have that trusted source in one location per medium. One place for email, one place for PowerPoints, one place for code, one place for your bills, physical bills, one place for tickets, one place for USB cables. And you want to keep those available and updated all the time. What you don't want is to have stuff spread all over the place. That way you can get to it when you need it. And when you've decided what you want to do, it's surprising that project managers seem to be the people with the most email and the least amount of time, and they're actually managing your project. What you should do is you should schedule work sprints. Run your life like a scrum. Sprint as fast as you can for a finite amount of time. I'm going to show you how to do that. Before I do, this is Pee Wee Herman saving some snakes from a fire. Who does the Pomodoro technique? Where are my Pomodoro people at? Awesome. So for those of you who don't know what a Pomodoro is, but you saw half the room's hands go up, you should be like, oh, I know what that is. Pomodoro, I think it's Italian for tomato. Unless there's any Italians here, I'm just going to say that that's what it means. I have no idea. There's actually this tomato timer you can get. It is a little plastic timer, like an egg timer. You can twist the tomato. And a pomodoro is a unit of time. It's 25 minutes, not a half an hour. It's 25 minutes, and when someone says, I want you to do this coding task, what you want to do is say, well, that looks like about 4 pomodoros. It's about 2 hours, right? 4 half-hour segments. It's 25 minutes because you have 5 minutes to pee. So what you do is you set the timer, and you focus on one thing for 25 minutes. This is the challenge. Can you focus on one thing for 25 minutes without being interrupted? There's two kinds of interruptions, okay? There are external interruptions, and there are internal interruptions, okay? You want to be aware of those interruptions and observe them, deal with them, accept them, and keep moving. The goal is to remain in your flow. It's really hard between Twitter and Alt-Tab. Sometimes your hand just Alt-Tabs. You don't even know why. You're at another, whoa, I Alt-Tabbed, and I'm like, suddenly I'm in solitaire. I don't know how that happened. You know, like, I'm really good at solitaire, so this is, what happened? And then there's external interruptions. I call these toast. You know when toast pops up? Like Skype. Right? Skype is this amazing thing. You can FaceTime anyone you want anywhere in the world, but all Skype does is tell me about birthdays of people I don't like. I'm coding, I'm focused. Oh, it's so-and-so's birthday. What the hell was I doing? That's toast. Go to Outlook. Turn off Outlook notifications. Check your email on a schedule. Set a time, check your email. Do you think that when Usain Bolt, you know, the world's fastest man, is running, he will get like a text and keep running and be like, oh, I'll check the text? No, he's running. He's doing one thing, single tasking. Turn off the external interruptions. What you do with the Pomodoro technique, and you can go and download the free book about the Pomodoro technique, is you focus on one thing for 25 minutes. If there's an interruption, just tick it like on a piece of paper. Just go tick, tick, tick. And then at the end of the 25 minutes, you say, wow, I was interrupted by myself 3 times, and I was interrupted by toast or texts or whatever 4 times. And then you do another Pomodoro, and you see if you can do better. And you will be surprised, first, how hard it is, and then how much work you get done. And then you'll start measuring your day in Pomodoros. You'll say, I got 12 Pomodoros worth of work done today. And you'll be done in 6 hours. We are spending a lot of time goofing around at work. Or this guy is bugging us. Just, this is our boss. That's my boss. Not really. The reason that we think being interrupted is okay is because we think it's more important. But it's not. The thing that you're working on is more important. So you want to think about what we call the principles of flow. Important things, if they're really important, they will find themselves to you many times. If there's a fire, if there's another 9/11, if someone, some famous actor dies, those important things, if a server goes down, there's not just going to be one opportunity to hear about that. There's going to be multiple opportunities. They're going to find you multiple times. Did you know that you can put your phone on airplane mode on the ground? I am so productive on an airplane. I just get so much work done. You know you can do that here. It's called closing the door and turning off your phone. Wouldn't I need to get like a big metal tube and just in a really uncomfortable seat? No, you can actually do that here. It's amazing how much work you can do if you just put your head down and run. And then there's that guy. This person tweeted this wonderful thing. He says, the worst app on my iPhone is this thing called Phone, where you have to speak synchronously with other humans. I think it's funny how young people don't like the telephone. It's a very, very efficient way to have a meeting with a person one-on-one without having to go anywhere. It's a lot faster than typing. I'm amazed that you honestly think that you can type faster than I can talk. Absolutely impossible. Huge waste of time. I think it's amazing that Slack is a $1 billion business, but people won't pick up the phone to get work done. They also seem to think that synchronicity being synchronous, doing things one after the other is a problem. It turns out humans are really good at doing one thing at a time. In fact, the optimal number of threads in any system is one. Multitasking is kind of a lie. It's cooperative multitasking, right? It's juggling. This is an example of poor multitasking. He's texting right here. He puts his arm back behind his head and keeps texting. We have a word for these people in the U.S. We call them organ donors. People think multitasking is possible. It is not. In fact, you should be sprinting as many times as you can in a day. Now, these are some things that are what we call feasible or possible multitasking, right? Things that you can do at the same time. Working out and watching TV or working out and listening to podcasts is pretty good. I've heard some people do email by voice while driving. A little bit dodgier, but as long as both hands are on the wheel. But if you're taking a train, this is a great time to multitask. You're moving and you are getting stuff done. Here is me multitasking. Seriously, the iPhone has completely changed the way that I poop. What did we do in there before? You know what I mean? And isn't it amazing the creativity that we see in cell phone development these days? The other thing that we do is we set up these guilt systems. We literally set up systems to make ourselves feel bad about ourselves. I had a book stack sitting on my desk for a number of years as if I was actually going to read The Ruby Way from cover to cover. We all have a copy of Code Complete sitting on our shelves that we've never read. And what'll happen is every few months you'll look at the guilt pile and you'll move something to the top. You go, all right, I'll read The Ruby Way this week. You're never going to read those books. And it's getting embarrassing. And here's the thing. I'm saying it out loud, but everyone here has done this. But we don't talk about it because we're ashamed. We're ashamed that we never read that book, and we think that we need to stay up later to work on it. Here's what you really need to do. Take the books you're never going to read and never read them. Then make a pile of things that you'll actually read. Of course, the dean is freaking out at this point. Then set an appointment on your calendar and read them. When else are you going to read? I'll read them in my free time. No, put it on your calendar. Remember how I said Friday at 4 o'clock is when I start looking at my week? I also have an hour set aside on Friday to read long-form technical information. And if my boss comes in and wants to know what I'm doing, I'm improving my brain for the better of the company. I'm trying to learn this stuff right now. I'm certainly not going to try to do it when the kids are asleep. When am I going to do this stuff? I had to accept also that I'm not Robert Scoble. I cannot be simultaneously current and up to date on the latest things of all kinds. I can't be an expert on technology and pop culture and the latest diet trends. So I'm going to let someone else do that. Remember how I did that prioritization line and I drew a line when I was going to prioritize? You can do the same thing. If someone says, Scott, we need you to learn Python. Okay, I'll learn Python. Do I need to learn everything I need to know about Python? Or do I need to learn all the stuff about Python, including useless trivia? Draw a line. I want you to learn the need to know and should know stuff, but not the edge cases or the useless stuff. Draw a line. How good am I going to be at 3D printing or woodworking or CrossFit or whatever? And draw a line and accept that you're never going to learn that other stuff, and you can look it up if you need to. Go through your items, your news feeds, your inboxes, and audit them. Pull out the stuff that's noisy that you're never going to read. If you find yourself saying mark all as read a lot, delete. It's even faster than clicking mark all at read. I know some people that spend a half an hour every morning cleaning out their spam and going, you know, delete, 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 the spam that comes to your inbox. But they won't actually click unsubscribe, which would solve the problem once and for all. Instead, I read just a few blogs. I actually prefer blogs that are aggregators of other blogs. I let someone else do the work. There's a really great .NET blog called The Morning Brew. And it's this guy has done 1,000 of these things. And every day, he reads all the .NET blogs and then summarizes them for me. I don't even have to pay for it. That's amazing. So I'll read blogs like Boing Boing or The Verge or Lifehacker. That's like 3 blogs to read. And then I'm up to speed on stuff. The last thing I want you to do is think about your tool set, because you have to find the right tool for the job, find the right tool for your job. But at the same time, you can't make these changes that I'm asking you to make unless you actually measure how you work. I don't want you to just go and indiscriminately do stuff. I want you to measure this. One of my favorite tools is a product called Rescue Time. Any Rescue Time people here? No? Couple? This is a great application that runs in the background and looks at which window is in front that you're working on. And then you can categorize it as being distracting stuff. This is distracting, or whether it's productive. So you could say Outlook is a productive thing, and Reddit is distracting, or whatever. And it'll give you a chart. And here it's saying distracted time by hour. You can see around 1 in the morning, I'm goofing around. And then around 4 p.m. at work, I start goofing around. I didn't know that about myself. I didn't realize that around 4 o'clock, I check out. Here is very productive time by day. You'll notice that there's a drop in productivity on this Monday. That's because my appendix burst, and I was in the hospital. But I'm also an idiot, so the next day, that's me in the hospital in Outlook. And then I went back to work on Wednesday. Again, I'm an idiot. But now I have a chart that proves it. There's also a lot of physical things that come into your life. Tickets, coupons, tax forms. Those can be confusing. Sometimes we'll put them into filing cabinets, but we'll often lose them. Or they sit in piles on our desks. One of the things that you can do is a thing called 43 folders. You literally go and get 43 folders. And if you're going to steal from your work office supplies, this is a good reason to do it. Theoretically, hypothetically. What you do is you take 43 folders, you take 12 and you mark them for the months, and then 31 and you mark them for the days. And then you lay them out, so this is what, October? So you'd have October, what is this, 19th? So I'd have October and then the 20th, 20 all the way through 31, then I'd have November, and I'd make a circular buffer of these things. And then when a bill comes that's due in December, you stick it in the December folder and you release it, you forget about it. And then every day you just open up that day and you look at it, and you have whatever paper you need, you move it to the back and you keep that buffer going. So if someone gives me an invite to some concert that's 4 months out, I take that ticket and I drop it in there in January, and I forget about it, and I know for a fact that it will come around again. This is a brilliant way to keep track of paper in a very, very simple way. Now, some people really like paper, but they don't want to buy an iPhone. I would encourage you to think about getting a hipster PDA. You can just print out 3x5 cards and then put a little clip on top, and it's got touch screen and retina and everything. When I get really stressed out, I sink to paper. I think that people are focused on having high-resolution monitors, but they forget they can just print out a bunch of sheets of paper and put them on the ground and just look at them. When I get really overwhelmed, I print out my calendar for the year. And I will literally, this is true, I will literally stand up like this and just get a sense, like a 20,000-foot view. And then even better, you can go like this and zoom in and zoom out. It's very high resolution. I encourage people to look at tools like Evernote. I like using OneNote now because it's on my iPhone. Workflowy is a great tool. I'm not saying use them all. I'm saying pick the one or two that make you happy. Trello, any Trello people here? Trello is fantastic, right? Kanban tool. Here's a funny one. If you have this many tabs open, you're a horrible person. Because what are you doing? You're saying, I'm going to read that later. No, you're not. You're never going to read that. Chrome is going to crash, and then you're going to run it again, and you're going to go, do I restore tabs or not? I'll screw it. When did read it later, the gesture for read it later, become add, you know, open in new tab? When did it become okay to give 4 gigabytes of memory on my computer to stuff I will never read? To flash ads that will run in the background and use up my CPU? But there should be a gesture for read it later. So what I do is I use Instapaper. Another one is Pocket. There's also a reading list on iPhones and on Windows 10. I've got a button that says read later. And when I click that, it's a bookmarklet. It sends the URL off to Instapaper. And Instapaper has Windows apps, Windows phone apps, they've got iPhone apps. It strips out the ads, it strips out the theme, and it sends you just the text of that long form document. I've even set up rules in IFTTT where if I star a tweet that has a URL in it, the article from that URL goes into Instapaper. So it's funneling all of the things that I want to read into one place. So why is that interesting? Well, because I have a Kindle, and I schedule when I want to read, right? So what I do is I actually have a complete book of all of the articles that I starred that week automatically emailed to my Kindle. It appears on my Kindle, which is all of the articles that I want to read that week from that I've been collecting all week long. And then I read my personalized book. Isn't that a great, great technique? This is all free stuff you can do. You can email this stuff to the Kindle. Your Kindle has a email address. We talked about email rules and filters. We'll skip over that. If this, then that is a really great tool. For example, if there's a new photo in Instagram, then put it in Dropbox. Stuff like that. If you star a tweet, take the URL and send it to Instapaper. We like Dropbox. We like OneDrive. The other thing here to think about is throwing out stuff, remember? Dropping stuff. This gentleman had a great quote, if it's not helping me make money, if it's not improving my life in some way, it's mental clutter and it's out. I'm going to skip the make money part, I'm going to cut that out, and I'm going to say you fill in what you think is important. If it's not helping me to improve my marriage, hang out with my kids, improve my health, whatever the thing is that is important to you, figure that thing out. If it's not helping me to blank, it is mental clutter and it is out. That could be friends that are not useful friends that waste a lot of time. That can be bad habits. That can be tools. That can be software. That can be anything you want. If it's not helping me, it's out. Here's your homework. Take your pictures of this. Sort your sources. Schedule work sprints. Turn off toast and distractions. Think about how you triage and go through your personal toolbox and consider some of the tools that you're using. And I very much appreciate you giving me 1 hour of your time. I think that is the end, and we're going to party now, right? Thank you.